about that?
Well, we are actually live.
Okay, good.
Welcome to On.NET, a weekly chat with the .NET team and guests. And today our guest is Scott Hunter, who is our boss, actually.
That's kind of new, actually.
Yeah, it's very new, very, very new.
So for people that don't know, Bertrand and I worked on the ASP.NET team, what, 2007 through?
I started working with ASP.NET team in 2003, actually.
Okay, I joined Bertrand in 2007, and then you left the ASP.NET team when?
About 4 years ago, to go on a startup venture, and then I came back in June. And you had a startup,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, to give people, a lot of folks might think that the ASP.NET team was always part of the .NET team. Mm. And that was true in the beginnings, but the way the history of the ASP.NET team was in about 2010, that was when Azure started becoming a big thing inside of Microsoft. And Scott Guthrie left the developer division to go work on Azure. And when he did, he took all of the webby bits of DevDiv with him. So that was the... that was when some of the teams that left were the Visual Web Developer team. That's the team that builds the web experiences inside of Visual Studio, the HTML, CSS, JavaScript editors, the web project systems and stuff like that. Went to go with Scott. Scott took the ASP.NET work with him as well. And that was mainly focused because we wanted to make the Azure experience really, really good. And so we built a new team that focused on taking the best of the web we had and making it work in Azure. It was kind of a funny experience at the time. I remember sitting with my team and we're trying to go build an app in Azure, and it took an hour to build your first app in Azure. And so over the next year or two, we actually worked to speed that up. We got to the point where you could basically launch VS, file new, create a web app, get it in Azure, all within about 5 minutes, and even debug it and watch live streaming logs, a lot of stuff. And so—
And deploy new versions.
And so that's kind of the history of how the ASP.NET team, they kind of moved away from the .NET team a little bit. That said, even though we were away, we still worked very closely with developer division because that was our shipping vehicle. Any ASP.NET shipped as part of Visual Studio. And so even though we were in this Azure group, we still liaised quite a bit with the Visual Studio team. About 2 weeks ago, we finally put the band back together and we moved the ASP.NET team back into developer division with .NET. And so I think we've kind of unified the .NET platform all up, where we have UWP, console, web, class library, all in the same place. WinForm, WPF, all back in the same place together. So I'm excited.
Yeah, we are too.
All right, Rich is not excited.
Y'all are excited?
I'm excited. I was trying to retweet your tweet. Oh. I'm hearing a lot of feedback.
Okay, so what do you think it means for people using ASP.NET or .NET today? Does it mean that the .NET core release will be different, or?
I think one of the things that customers might have seen, and I know I've seen the questions around this, is, okay, the teams were in different places. If you looked at what ASP.NET has done the last year and a half or so, I think there was some confusion. And let me just level set people and kind of explain what was happening. So the ASP.NET team, about 2 years ago, started exploring the idea of doing cross-platform ASP.NET. And also we were exploring building a very high-performant version of ASP.NET. One of the things that as a web guy and a .NET person, I want to make .NET kick ass. And so what that means is if you go to a web benchmark, I want my technology, ASP.NET and .NET, to be in the top 10 of that list. And so we started looking at how to do cross-platform and how to do super high performance in the web platform. And that led to us doing a bunch of experimentation, which as part of this new wave of ASP.NET, we did all in the public. It was our first experience of doing a public project. Typically, if you're a customer of ours, you don't see any of our experimentations. You just see something pop out at the very end And this experience has been interesting because we started off and we built a prototype, and then we had this thing called DNX. And DNX was really a way for us to package up .NET Core. It was some command line tools. And it also was a process of saying, if you start with on a machine without Visual Studio, what is your experience? Like, for example, hand editing a CS proj file was not what we thought would be a good way to do that. And so our team did a whole bunch of experimentation in this space. And you would have seen it if you played with our product anywhere from beta 1 through beta 8, you would have seen, or even RC1, you would have seen this kind of collection of stuff. At the same time we were doing that, the .NET team was working on Windows 10. So we wanted to have this new way of building Windows 10 applications. That is, you write the application once, and the application can run a universal Windows application. It can run on a phone, can run on a tablet, can run on the desktop. And so as customers, if you were watching, you probably saw the .NET teams building UWP and ASP.NET's building DNX. And it feels like we're kind of going in separate directions.
And UWP has another interesting characteristic, which is compilation to native code.
Yes.
Right. So that
which a core tenet of UWP is basically you build an application, it's natively compiled, and so you get the best of all experiences. You're running it natively on your phone or your tablet or whatnot.
And from the outside, a natural reaction is to think, well, would that be useful in ASP.NET?
So that's interesting. We've actually done enough prototyping to actually know if that is interesting for ASP.NET. So first off, native compilation, you go, wow, that sounds like it's going to be much faster. Well, the reality is in .NET, we JIT anyways. So we just-in-time compile. So really the main change you'll see in an ASP.NET application would be startup time. Right now your ASP.NET application starts up and we're going to JIT your application and the libraries it depends on, which means we could boot up a little slower than we want. But once we get going, we're actually really, really fast. I mean, the current ASP.NET core betas that we have, we're running 1.15 million requests a second in our lab. Mm. And we have enough stuff in, we have 40% more performance sitting in pull requests for us to take, which will get us up to 1.6 million requests a second.
What about working set?
So I was going to say, so performance, you don't really see a big difference. Now, working set, it cuts in half. The working set when we get to the point of having native compilation for ASP.NET, we'll cut the working set in half. And so at some point when we reconcile all these worlds together, the long-term goal is to get ASP.NET where it is running on native compilation as well as an option. You can actually either just publish it and have us JIT it, or you could actually pre-compile the entire thing natively and run that. And the big benefit you'll get is if you're doing density work where you want to run lots of apps on a server, you're going to get basically half the working set. And you could run a lot more apps in a server. But to go back to where things were, I saw feedback from customers. It's like, hey, the ASP.NET team is doing this DNX thing over here, and the .NET team is doing something different. You know, what's going on there? And the reality was, we didn't get a chance as teams to even think about reconciling these worlds back together into a cohesive story until after we shipped Windows 10. Once we shipped Windows 10 last summer, that's when the two teams got back together and started saying, what if we take the best of the DNX world and some of the ideas that the .NET team had around building console applications, both native, once again, they were trying to build native console applications, and merge those things back together. And that's what you see today. If you look at the ASP.NET RC1, that was the last build that we dropped out on the DNX path. And we actually just delayed a week or so ago, RC2, as we try to reconcile these two worlds together, where we have one cohesive story, no matter if you're building a class library or a console application or a web application, that should all be the exact same tool chain all the time. And that's what we're calling, internally, we call that the .NET CLI. Rich, you want to say anything about that?
All true. Yeah, I think the way to think about it is, just to kind of reiterate what you said is, we built this DNX thing. It was really good in the sense that it implemented the vertical for web and also had some general purpose utility. We're working very closely with the folks that built DNX from the web team. And what we're trying to do now is kind of a little bit the inverse of what DNX was, which is continue to make sure that we've got a great kind of horizontal base that can be almost used for anything. And now we're trying to layer in the web vertical on top and basically make it as easy to use and provide the same features that DNX had before, but not make it tied to the web requirements like DNX was. So that's what we're actively working on. We actually had a meeting yesterday talking about exactly that. And the other thing is there were actually some problems that DNX hadn't quite solved. And so we're actively trying to solve some additional problems as well. So I'm actually fairly hopeful. It's gonna be pretty good.
Yeah, there's some obviously some of those challenges that Rich is talking about now is as we move to this .NET CLI world, we still have some interesting vertical problems as well, which is if you're in that web space, the Azure space, how do I publish an application without having to publish the framework every time I publish the application? There's a, you know, what we want to do is be able to put, you know, various versions of the .NET CLI up onto a Azure box. So as a customer, all you've got to do is upload the minimalistic part of your web app to get that thing going. And so that's yeah. That's some of the stuff we're trying to reconcile now, as Rich was saying in some meetings yesterday.
Like another part of it is today, if you use Azure with, say, websites, you get to specify, say, which .NET framework version you want, 4.x or 3.5. Or you, if you're on the PHP side, there's a couple of PHP versions that you get to select. So as we go to ASP.NET Core, what do those selections look like in the Azure dialog? So we're definitely looking at that end of the user experience in addition to kind of just the more mechanical deployment system. So I believe that's coming together, and we'll have some information to post on that relatively soon to get some feedback.
Yeah, and we still want to offer crazy features as well. Like if you want to replace, like, you know, some component of .NET as part of your upload, you would still be able to do that as well. So I can depend on something there and maybe replace something as well. So we want to serve all those different weird angles and capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, the a la carte option is super important. I mean, we do expect that since it's a V1 product, that we're going to have to give people a bunch of fixes for, you know, perf or reliability or just some small feature that they needed for their scenario. And we want to have the flexibility to say, like, you know, Joe or Jane customer, go take this one assembly and go use it today and not have to wait for like some super official release to come out.
Yep. So I think the team's being, you know, this change we just made where you actually put the ASP.NET team and the .NET team closer together, I think will just make these interactions even better. Most people don't realize this, but we're actually in building, the ASP.NET team's in building 44, the .NET team is in building 25 and 18. So we're not even in the same buildings today, and hopefully we're going to get that resolved as well. I would love to actually have both teams sitting side by side all the time and working closer together. We do the best we can today, but I think it'll get better.
Yeah, there's actually a busy street in between us with a very slow light that takes a long time to change. and it's raining all the time.
Yeah, this time of year is not a good time to do all the walk back and forth. So I've never had an umbrella in my entire Microsoft career, but I actually bought one this last year. So. Because I spend so much time walking back and forth between the buildings.
Yeah, it's probably the worst actually for you.
Yeah, probably.
You were talking about performance earlier and the benchmarks. How important is it to get the benchmarks right? Is it a matter of looking good, or what would you say the balance is between looking good in the benchmarks and doing performance work that is actually going to be useful to our customers
and
users?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. That's performance is always a weird thing. Mm. So I know I ASP.NET historically, we never really have worked on performance to a massive scale. I mean, this is probably the first time since I've been at Microsoft that we really sat down and really, really, really looked at performance. And the reason we haven't before is mainly because most of the time it's a customer's code that's going to control the speed of their application. So typically in a web application, it's not ASP.NET or P PHP or Node that's actually your performance bottleneck. It's going to be the database that you're talking to, the NoSQL that you're talking to, the APIs that you're calling. Those things are going to be the things that actually, you know, determine the performance of your application. So most of the time in ASP.NET, we never took a huge deep dive at this because we always thought it was going to be more of a customer problem. And that's why there's features in all these web stacks to do things like caching and stuff like that to solve this. Before I joined Microsoft, I worked on and built some social networking sites. And we used to have rules on how many calls you can make per page. And even then we would say, you have to cache these calls and keep the data for a period of time. And those are the things that you actually have to do to make your web application really go fast. But back to your point, Bertrand, I think a funny thing is, and I'll just say the performance numbers. If you look at ASP.NET 4.7 or 4.6, 4.7 in that space, roughly we can do 60,000 requests a second is what a typical, that's a web form application, complicated enough. It's not an MVC application. MVC will be slower. That's a misnomer. A lot of folks go, oh yeah, MVC is the fastest ASP.NET web framework. Well, MVC technically runs on top of web forms. And so your MVC application is running on top of the infrastructure, the system web infrastructure from web forms. And so because it's running on top of something else, it's actually a little slower than if you're running a web form application. But the cool thing is as we started looking at the benchmarking, first off, the big thing that we're really doing is the way you make the web framework go faster is you reduce allocations. And the thing that makes .NET go slower is obviously the more memory you allocate, some part of .NET has to run in the background and slowly get rid of that memory. And so most of the work we're doing is to reduce allocations. Now what's cool about this is I was saying that system web is about 60,000 requests a second on our benchmark hardware. We've got ASP.NET Core now running about 1.15 million requests a second. And one reason it does that is because we now made it modular, meaning that if you want to go write an ASP.NET Core application, you don't have to have routing and error handling and MVCs and all that stuff going in your application. You can now just write a bare metal, here's a socket, and we're going to call you and hand you the request when it comes in, and you can go party on that. And so we modularized ASP.NET, letting you decide as a customer how much of the stack you might want to run. If you're running a really high performant part of your application and you really need really crazy transactions, maybe you're doing stock ticking or stock trackers or stuff like that, you need that performance, just turn the framework off and do a little bit more work bare metal. Now what's really cool here though is, and this is where in the same benchmark that we're running 1.15 million, Node.js is running around 200,000 in the same benchmark. So we're 5-6 times the speed of Node.js. The cool thing is if I throw MVC on top of ASP.NET Core, MVC is now running at 250,000 requests a second. So Node.js is running no framework. That's bare metal, just like ASP.NET Core is. Yeah. As soon as you put Express on Node, which is a web framework for Node, its performance is going to drop down. The cool thing for us is we can actually run ASP.NET MVC on top of ASP.NET Core faster than Node can run with no framework.
Yeah.
And so from that perspective, I would say that's where some of the ultra benchmarking stuff that we've done and performance work will actually apply even to a regular customer. So it's not even, this is, most customers will not see the 1.15 million because they're not going to just go write a simple entry point. But the fact that enough of that fell backwards into the full stack of MVC means that all of our customers are going to see an improvement across the board. And that's actually more exciting to me than the high level number is the fact that we were able to lift the frameworks that most people want to use. Because that's the reason you use ASP.NET or Express or any framework is because it makes your life easier.
Yeah. And on Orchard 2, which is built on top of .NET Core, we're also seeing some huge performance benefits.
Tell me about that. How far have you guys gotten in porting that thing to Core?
It's a rewrite first, similar to
typically a Core port for
it's really in tune with the rest of the Core work. So it's a rewrite. There is a reimagining of the architecture, so the architectural pieces are in place, and it's able to serve requests. Display content items, theming works, and there is the beginning of a dashboard. So it's progressing nicely. It's probably the most advanced CMS
work
that is running on .NET Core today. So I think we're far ahead of everybody else on that. And I think it's a very sane and clean architecture. So
what kind of performance are you seeing? Are you seeing five times or four times or one times? I mean, what?
I couldn't give you an exact number, but if I remember correctly, we're serving several thousand requests per second, which is a lot more than what we're getting on all the ASP.NET MVC.
Yeah, an ASP.NET customer should see.
It's a real application.
Exactly. Even a real application.
It's a CMS. It's massive.
Yeah. One of the things when you're in this benchmarking space, it's some of the people that end up at the top of the benchmarking space are doing really crazy shortcuts to get to the top of the space. You know, they're saying, hey, if a request comes in with less than four headers, we'll just stick them directly into strings versus putting them into a dictionary because I don't want to allocate a dictionary because that's expensive. And to me, as I said, the cool thing is the fact that we can make MVC run four or five times faster than the old MVC.
Yeah, and
means that those shortcuts aren't, you know, even yeah. without doing those kinds of crazy shortcuts, we're trying not to do fake shortcuts. We're not trying to make it fast.
Yes.
Fakely, we're trying to make it just fast better.
It does well because the architecture is better.
Exactly, the architecture is better. Yeah. And then even things like MVC, if you look at Razor was something that was double or triple buffered in the previous MVC, mm-hmm. meaning that if you had a 5K page of Razor, we would allocate at least 10K, if not 15K of memory internally mm-hmm. for that. All that double and triple buffering is removed in ASP.NET Core.
Yeah, and the work to reduce allocations and being able to reuse that buffers and all that stuff is actually usable by applications.
Everybody. So everybody's going to get that.
Everybody benefits from that.
So I think everybody's going to see their perf go up. And then one more thing on the perf thing that I think is important. You know, we've been talking cross-platform since we started this ASP.NET Core mm-hmm. thing. It was ASP.NET 5 at the time. And I always wonder when I go and talk to customers, are they going to say that, oh, you're just saying you're cross-platform because you want to be cool, but you don't really care about it. And the perf numbers that we're talking about are applicable to the Linux world as well. So we're not going to make ASP.NET Core be really fast on Windows and not as fast on Linux. In our benchmarks internally right now, the way it actually works, and we don't know why some of this, by the way, this is just early data. On an 8-core machine, ASP.NET is faster on Windows than it is on Linux. On a 16-core machine, it's about the same between both of them. And then on a 32-core machine, Linux is faster than Windows.
Interesting.
We think that's a bug somewhere in our Windows implementation. We don't think it's an operating system issue, but that is a core tenet as well. So when we talk about 1.15 million and 250,000 requests a second for MVC, that is on all the platforms, not on one platform. So that's our commitment to cross-platform is real and full.
Sebastian is saying that our Char 2 is 10 times faster than our Char 1.
Oh, that's a good number.
That's an awesome number. So Sebastian, who is one of the lead developers on Orchard, who also works at Microsoft, he just chimed in on chat and told us that 10 times faster. So Orchard running on ASP.NET Core is 10 times faster than it was on ASP.NET 4.x.
Yeah.
I think that makes the perf stuff not just a benchmarky thing. That said, there's still a lot of work for us to be done. So the benchmark that we do 1.15 million on is the plain text benchmark on Tech Empower. They have another benchmark called Fortunes. And so the Fortune benchmark is a real, so I would call the plain text one a fake benchmark.
Yeah.
But it does.
It gives you the bare minimum that you can do just serving one little static piece of content.
Right.
So that's pretty much useless.
But it does give
you the lower bar that you cannot possibly.
But we did kill a lot of the allocations and stuff inside of ASP.NET with that benchmark. But the next one, which is the one that's more of a real workload, is called Fortunes. And in the Fortunes benchmark, where actually your web application is actually making calls to databases and other stuff while it's running. And that's important as well because the plain text benchmark, we're not even touching networking for the most part because basically ASP.NET is sitting on top of libuv, which is sitting on top of the core OS, and all networking is going through that stack. When you get to something like Fortunes, then you're testing another part of your implementation, which is, I'm going to make a call to a SQL database or a Postgres database or a MySQL database. well, then you're going to invoke a networking stack. And that's an area where we still have work to be done. So we're not going to just stop and just say we're just going to do the plain text thing. We're going to go work on fortunes. We're going to go work on all of them with the goal of being...
And is fortunes cached or is there no cache at all?
I don't think it's cached. But I do think it does warm up, though. You know, once again, most database servers, right, once they warm up, will pretty much be cached at the database layer, but the networking calls are still happening.
Right.
And right now, our networking stack is not as good as we would like it to be. And so that's an area that we'll have to continue to push and work on as well. But the goal for the team is not to just do a plain text benchmark. We want to actually say that our real frameworks work faster, and we'll go look at the Fortune's benchmarks and make sure that we're doing outbound networking is faster. You know, we care across the board. And part of the reason we care is, you know, Bertrand's worked on .NET a long time, so has Richard and myself. The reason we do the benchmarks is we think putting .NET, making .NET look fast in a benchmark. I hope that with the CLI work that we're doing with native for building console applications, I hope we do the same kind of thing. Let's go show what .NET console applications performance is compared to Go or compared to C++. Where do we land, and what I think all up, we want to make .NET be cool. And the way to make .NET be cool is to every place that you look at frameworks and stacks, make sure we're in the top 5, top 10. And so we can't be ignored because we are cross-platform, we are open source, and we're fast everywhere. And that's kind of my mindset is, you know, make the kids that are all seeing the nodes and the goes and all those things have a chance to see that we're actually competitive everywhere.
Yeah, and we need to tell people that
yes,
we're fast, because there are a few other competitive platforms that have that reputation of being very fast.
And they don't even know that we are fast.
Yeah, and we are actually faster in some cases.
We are faster, and I think we're going to become faster in more and more cases.
Yes.
So in the case of web, Tech Empower is the website, and we actually will have, it's open source, and so we're going to, once we're RTM'd, we're going to push our bits up there as well, and you'll be able to see our bits live in that place.
And that's interesting, actually, that they are open source, because when you compare to benchmarks that we had, you know, in the beginning of .NET,
spy portals,
BetShop and
pet shops,
those were really debatable.
Well, especially since we were writing Java implementations,
yes,
as well, and
we
wrote our own Java version of the thing, and
Those benchmarks are really community driven, and they are more transparent. Anybody can actually run them and verify numbers. So I think it's a much saner.
It feels saner to me too. I mean, it was fun for us not to have to go make fake benchmarks ourselves. We just went and grabbed the benchmarks live from the Tech Empower GitHub.
Yeah, exactly.
And we run them in a lab in our.
We're not making that stuff
up. We're not making it up.
Yeah.
We're not faking it. Yeah. Maybe we don't know how to set up Linux perfectly, but once we start running our benchmarks in Tech Empower on their site, where can we do this for console applications and stuff like this? Is there a place for us? Is there a benchmark place that we can go do that as well?
Yeah, I have a presentation for you that I will send you after this meeting.
Well, there's a lot of computation type benchmarks that we actually do use. And as we were bringing up Ryujit, for example, we did a bunch of those. So that would definitely be a place to start for something like native compilation.
Yeah. But all up, I mean, we want to go find, just like we found Tech Empower for the web, we want to go find those same things for console and everywhere else. And so nobody can debate those things. And they can, those benchmarks, run them on Linux.
They're not quite as popular, but there are some good ones. So.
I have another thought on what you were saying, Scott, which is that... you know, you said that before, like with .NET Framework today, we have a certain performance level. And as we've been doing this project, we've been exceeding that. I think one of the things is that, you know, Windows was always our baseline. Like, there wasn't another thing that we were comparing with. And if you think back, like, Node wasn't a Windows thing before. And then, as I recall, as they ported to Windows, they actually got higher performance on Windows because of IO completion ports than they had seen on Linux. And then they kind of figured out what the story was there, and I think then the performance on Linux went up again. So as we kind of do this back and forth thing, I think it's going to be super valuable for our project, because we'll see that there's these other capabilities on other operating systems, and we'll do the right thing.
Exactly.
The rising tide lifts all the boats.
Yeah. And another piece
about naming.
Yeah.
Can I say one more thing about performance?
Yeah.
The other thing is, it's a bit more historical in nature. Is, and you probably have more information on this than me, but I know that when we started this performance measurement, I heard that at the very, very start, we were getting something like 300 requests per second. So the reason I think this is interesting to bring up, because that's obviously a bad number, is because now we're at, you know, a million plus, is we could have done this thing. It's like, okay, it's the start of the project, you know, we find it's 300 requests per second. That's completely unacceptable. It's like, okay, well, clearly can the project. That's never going to work. But I think the point is that we had a lot of confidence that we could do this. And so, you know, it went from 300 to like 10,000 to 100,000. And then, you know, eventually the numbers we're seeing today. And I think that confidence hasn't stopped. Like I talk to people in the hallways, and no one's seeing these numbers as the end. Like, no one's closing up shop on this performance exercise. And there's whole sections of the product that we haven't even looked at yet. Like, it's actually been a very focused exercise on a particular part of the product for this. And as we continue with both the this particular Tech Empower benchmark and adopt some other ones, I think we'll start looking more broadly at the rest of the product and unlock a lot more performance. So I think that journey that probably a lot of people don't know about is actually quite interesting.
Yeah, we can't stop talking about performance. We have to say one more thing, which is it would not be fair to end this conversation without talking about the fact that Microsoft did not do a lot of the performance work. So at least 30 or 40% of the performance work was done by the community, not by us.
Absolutely.
Those are pull requests by Ben and some other folks, my hat's off to those people that question whether we should be open source or not. You need to realize that 30 or 40% of all that performance that we talked about, that 1.15 million, did not come from Microsoft engineers. That came from external Microsoft engineers.
Yeah, on my side, what I've encountered, I guess is the way to say it, is we were working with Joyent just before the Christmas break. And they identified a bunch of hotspots with a scenario they were trying to bring up. And they shared all that data with us. We happened to be, I think we were the ones who made all the fixes. I think that's mostly irrelevant. I think it's mainly the point that they did the due diligence to try and bring up a scenario. It's actually on an OS that we didn't support exactly. And they gave us really deep, good traces. And we were able to work closely with them. So that's another kind of community contribution that is super important.
You mean open source works?
Yeah, it turns out, surprisingly, yeah.
So the open source thing is really cool too. The fact that, you know, it's not just us, it's the community that's doing the work, and it makes seeing .NET actually take these kinds of contributions is something I never imagined in 2007 when we started this journey.
Yeah, we didn't be here without it.
We should talk about naming.
Yes,
naming.
You go ahead. The questions or the show?
Well, okay, so we renamed a product pretty late. Why didn't we do that before?
That's a hard question. I don't know if I want to answer that question. Politics. There still are politics inside of Microsoft. The reality is we took a bunch of feedback, and some customers were confused by the name thing. So for people that haven't heard, we renamed ASP.NET 5 to ASP.NET Core, and we put a version 1 on it. And I don't know if we ever had called .NET Core version 5, but I know internally I'd seen slides that maybe Jay and I'd presented where even .NET Core was called 5 at one point as well. And .NET Core is now a version 1.2. So they're both 1.0s. And that was a message that we wanted to send. We had confused people in the ASP.NET space especially. It's like,
So would you say that the 1.0 is more important than the core part?
I think both are important. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain why they're both important. So there was some customer confusion around numbers especially. Mm. We had called this thing ASP.NET 5. Typically, when you call something ASP.NET 5, that implies that it is the successor of ASP.NET 4. And then after ASP.NET 5 ships, you should not use anything in ASP.NET 4 anymore.
And I can take my code and make it run.
And your code, you can just move your code. Your code just moves forward, and you're good to go. And
which is not the case.
Which is not necessarily the case. And so the we wanted to solve the 4 to 5 problem. That was the biggest confusion, which is this product is actually a different product.
Yes.
And that's why we renamed it from ASP.NET to ASP.NET Core, and we renamed the version from five back to 1, which is. If you are an existing ASP.NET customer today and you're building web forms or MVC or web API or SignalR, that ASP.NET 4X stack is a perfectly valid stack and people should continue to use that for a long time to move forward. You might ask yourself, when should you decide to do the core? When should you move to ASP.NET Core? You have to realize ASP.NET Core is also a 1.0 because it doesn't even have all the features of ASP.NET 4X. There is currently no SignalR. There is no web pages. The tooling is not at the same level of tooling as the ASP.NET 4X work because we've been working on that work since 2002. That's a very long project's worked for a long time. And so this product has less features and less products inside of it at this time. And so that's part of the reason we did the version name. If you're a customer today, the main benefits that you should think about if you want to look at core is enables a couple of things. It enables you to do side by side. This is the biggest complaint that I used to hear about from my customers, which was, hey, Microsoft just shipped .NET 4.6 and I want to take advantage of a feature. Well, I go talk to my IT department and they say, well, we'll put .NET 4.6 on machines in 2 years. And until then, you just have to live with whatever you have. Or I've had customers call me and say, hey, I've got this machine, it's got 25 applications on it. We want to move it to 4 or 5. Can you guarantee us that these applications will all still continue to work correctly? And the answer is no, we could not. I mean, .NET 4X is an operating system component.
When it's not, I upgraded my server and now my applications are broken.
Yes, but it's .NET is a global operating system component. And so one of the benefits of core is we let you actually ship the runtime as part of your application, which means you could take a machine that's got .NET 4X on it, 4.5 on it, and you're safe to go put an ASP.NET core application on that machine, and you're guaranteed not to break any of the applications on the machine. It will not break anything. In fact, ASP.NET core doesn't even touch System 32. It doesn't touch the registry. It doesn't touch any of that stuff. It's just files on a disk.
Yeah.
So it has no impact on the machine. The same thing happens for a .NET CLI application as well. So if you want to go take advantage of the latest capabilities, the latest features of .NET Core with a CLI application, you're fine because when you natively build that application, you've compiled all of its dependencies into it and you end up with an executable that's good to go and will work everywhere. You can compile that executable to work on Windows, Mac, and Linux, and it's good to go. It doesn't require anything on the machine. Or you can run that as a folder full of DLLs if you want as well. So we're trying to give customers more choices and get away from the heavy-handedness of being an operating system component. So that's a reason to move to core. Another reason to move to core is the cross-platform stuff, obviously. And the reason we even did the cross-platform thing was, I think, a couple of reasons. One thing is I have customers that say, hey, so we're moving some of our server infrastructure to Linux, or we're going to move our stuff to Docker. And we'd love to be able to continue using .NET. And so this enables customers to be able to move to that if they need to in a seamless way. And so that's, I think, another benefit of core. And I think another cool benefit of core as well is it's really hard to build an ASP.NET application today with Notepad on a Mac. With core, we enable you to build,
Notepad on a Mac?
Sorry. Sublime on a Mac. With core, we enable you basically to be able to build .NET applications, whether they're console or web or whatnot, class libraries, on any machine. So if you have a developer who prefers to use a Mac and doesn't want to boot into Windows on his Mac, they can just use our tool chain natively on that. So suddenly you enable people in your organization to use, bring their own device to work and build .NET applications on whatever device they bring to work.
And having all those benefits is only possible with a significant rewrite of
the
platform.
Of the platform,
right.
I mean, if you think of .NET in the past, its tool chain was mainly tied to Visual Studio. If you didn't have a Visual Studio, you couldn't do a lot of stuff. Maybe you could do stuff without Visual Studio, but you had to have Visual Studio at least start you
yep.
and get you a project booted up, and then you could go edit the files manually with something else. So you know, one of the core tenets that we've done in this world is we've always said, by the way, we're not going to remove any of the visual from Visual Studio, but as we move to this new world, we said everything's command line first.
And then you build it.
And then we build Visual Studio tools to wrap that stuff inside of Visual Studio. So unbeknownst to most customers is, in like the DNX world today, when you're doing things inside of Visual Studio, it's just running the same DNX command line tools that you could do yourself from the console. And so it's really cool because it's developing this way means that we are thinking cross-device and cross-platform first. But we're still going to give you all the visual whiz bangs and productivity in VS as well.
Yep.
But it's the same tool chain. It's also cool that we're not duplicating the tool chain, where VS has got one tool chain and we have a different tool chain, and we're mimicking those things. So I think those are the main core reasons I would move to core.
Okay. Another kind of hard question about naming is, what about the .NET part? If it's a different product, why is it still called .NET? Is that a source of confusion?
I can't answer the .NET part because I just joined the .NET team like a week ago, so I'm not going to take any hit for that. But I can talk to the ASP.NET part. One thing customers told me is like, okay, so
yeah,
ASP.NET has this connotation. It's got this connotation of it was web forms and it was
Windows only.
Windows only, and maybe it was slow. I don't actually think it was slow ever. But it has these kind of, maybe it had a big tool chain and stuff like that. And so you ask yourself, why would you not just rename it to Cobalt or something completely different? I just made that up. the reason we didn't is. You can look at the history and the naming both ways. One is we have so much marketing work we've been talking about the ASP.NET product since 2002. It's got a huge history behind it. It's got tons of books. It's got, if you Google it, it's all over the place. Rebooting a brand, making a new brand and building its awareness takes a long time. I have firsthand seen this inside of Microsoft because as we moved into the Azure team and worked on the Azure product, mm-hmm. We've been doing Azure for now 6 years, and it still doesn't have the visibility that ASP.NET has.
Yeah.
And so I think a valid fear internally, and I support this, is that just coming up with a brand new name, I'm not sure we have the marketing power to go push that name hard enough. I mean, the reality is, as much as I love our technology, we are not an Office or a Windows or a Surface or an Xbox. You're not going to run ASP.NET ads on the Super Bowl.
So from the developer's point of view, the Google thing is actually interesting. Because on the one hand, there are a lot of things that we are still applying to the new world. So it's useful that you can actually type ASP.NET, optimize database access, for example,
yes.
and find some relevant hits. But on the other hand, how am I going to search for stuff that is specific to the new world? I'm just adding core to it, and it magically works.
So it actually does.
Is it a really good renaming?
It does. From the Google point of view? It does actually magically work. So when we actually looked at names, we actually tested what Bertrand just said, which is we started Googling ASP.NET Core, and we wanted to see what would come up. And what came up first was exactly what we wanted to come up first, which was docs.asp.net,
right?
Which is the documentation site for ASP.NET 5. This is, by the way, not on purpose. This is totally accidental. It just happens to be that because the ASP.NET 5 documentation had the word core CLR or .NET Core all through it.
Okay.
Google had indexed core against ASP.NET already.
Uh-huh.
And the Google actually does exactly what we wanted, because this, we tried exactly what you asked for, Bertrand. Yeah. We went to the search engine and typed this and said, what comes up?
Right.
We also tried alternatives. One of my favorite alternatives, which is overutilized in the .NET space, and so we didn't do it. The first idea was ASP.NET Unity. And the reason we liked that name, and the name was a cool name, was because if you look at ASP.NET over time, it started off being ASP.NET. And then we wanted to ship faster than .NET would ship. And so we built what we call OOBS, which is out of bands. That's MVC, Web API, SignalR. And so the product suddenly started going off in different directions, all with different versions at the same time. So right now we have MVC 5, Web API 3, Web Pages 2 or 3. I think we're on 3 on that. The whole platform got all cut up like that. And so one of the prime things about ASP.NET Core is it also unifies all of ASP.NET back together into a single product again. Because now the entire...
Yeah, but Unity is kind of overloaded already, so it probably wasn't such a good idea.
That was the idea. And then honestly, we looked at every synonym, and we looked at synonyms in different languages. I mean, we were looking at what Unity was in Zimbabwe and all kinds of stuff. We looked at a bunch of stuff. But then I think we finally landed on the Core name, mainly because the way I like to say it is ASP.NET Core is optimized to run on .NET Core. It runs on .NET framework as well. And a lot of customers, when they first start using ASP.NET Core, will use the .NET framework, mainly because .NET Core is by design less than the .NET mm-hmm. framework. And so we gave you the bridge, so you can still run against the .NET framework if you want. Mm-hmm. But if you want the cross-platform and the side-by-side and the being able to edit on a Mac and Linux scenario, you'll have to be in the Core world.
Thank you for not calling it ASP.NET Unity.
That was a comment we just got.
Well, so they are obviously very...
Nobody complained about Cobalt, though.
I would. there are many, many different names that could have been used. The one that we ended up with is not bad.
We'll do a blog post one day and maybe disclose the list of names.
The names you escaped from.
The best one was Scott Hanselman and I spent a week this is a year ago, and using space names. So we had like Orion and we had constellations, right, yeah, we had planets. Yeah. We tried all kinds of space stuff. That was one of the takes on it. What else do we want to talk about?
So we have another question from Alan here. Are there any features in DNX that are not coming to CLI? Well, I would think about the versioning stuff, the NVM. That's an interesting one maybe to talk about, because actually things became simpler.
Simpler how?
Well, previously you had to explicitly manage your .NET version from that command line. Now you specify it in project.json and pretty much things happen, right?
Yes. The command line only was required to put a DNX on the box. And so right now where we land today is, because you're not putting a DNX in the box, your project.json basically has your full list of dependencies that you require, and we will pull that list of dependencies for you on the fly as you go. So I guess it simplifies it from the standpoint of that. We are still looking at, this is what Rich was alluding to earlier in the call, we're still looking at maybe building something on top of CLI, because the web world is a little different than...
Right, if you want to manage that version that resides on the
exactly. OS. So we will still, I would say most of the stuff except commands from DNX is coming, yes, and a lot of the stuff is merging into other tools. So we had DNU, which is .NET Utility. It had a bunch of functionality that honestly should have been a NuGet, but because once again we were experimenting and playing, we didn't have time to go try to shove these things in NuGet. So we just basically forked NuGet and had our own custom version of NuGet that did our stuff. So right now, as part of the CLI effort, we're pushing that work back into NuGet now, so it's properly into NuGet. But the biggest thing I would say is, as Bertrand said, the biggest thing missing right now is the way you put frameworks on the machine and the way you manage the frameworks on the machine. But we're still looking right now for web scenarios that we're probably going to build some kind of abstraction on top of CLI, which is specific to the web vertical.
Okay, so for a console application, it's definitely simpler.
Yes, for a console application, it'll be definitely simpler. But you brought this up. You were saying you go to the portal in Azure and you select which thing you want to go. Yeah. We need something like that. And I don't want to have the customer have to upload 50 megs of stuff to get an app running. And so we're currently figuring that out. And I think we'll have something to say about that probably in the next few weeks.
Okay.
So we got a plus one for COBOL and a minus one for COBOL. Are we good? Actually, we're about out of time.
Yeah, we are about out of time. If you guys have any more questions, you have maybe 1 minute to ask them, and we are probably going to conclude. There is a little delay in the feed, so we'll give them some time. Where did Richard go?
He's on his way to work, I guess.
Yeah, he just disappeared.
Well, it's awesome to be working together again. So
absolutely. And I want to thank you for being on the show. And it's actually a great occasion to just talk about those things. So everything happens in the open now.
It truly does.
Even one-on-ones, you know.
Well, it's funny. I mean, we actually have made mistakes with the stuff in the open. Like, we talked about some of the renaming stuff in the open. We talked about some of the changing of the release dates in the open. And now we're trying to actually do blog posts right about the same time because people hear these.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the changes of date, actually. Is there anything we can share about that today?
So originally we had RC2 listed to be something we were going to ship at Build at the end of March, and we were going to ship an RTM. Actually, we were going to ship RC2, I was going to say, in about 2 weeks, and ship an RTM at Build. We went to our GitHub page. There's a GitHub page under ASP.NET where we show our schedule, and we switched that to be TBD about a week ago. And we did that because, as we said earlier in the conversation, we were merging DNX and CLI together, and the reality is that still hasn't cleanly landed. We realized it was not going to land about a week ago. And as soon as that happened, we went and changed the release dates to be TBD. And where we're at right now is I think we're probably pretty close to getting things to work internally. And once things work internally again, it'll be easier for us to go figure out what the schedule is. And we'll go back and update the dates. So I think within one more week or two more weeks, expect to go see the schedule updated. One thing I want to tell customers is, because we slipped a little bit, I've had some people reach out to me and go, does this mean you're not going to make it this year or it's going to be the fall? We should be out before the summer. I don't feel like we're going to slip ourselves into mid-year or beyond mid-year. So right now we're hoping that we're going to slip no more than 4 to 6 weeks.
And we are shipping something at Build.
We will ship something at Build, yes. There'll be something at Build, and it will be CLI-based. So it will be the merging of the DNX and the CLI concepts together. That will definitely be at Build. And the question really is, when does the RTM happen after that?
Okay. We have about 1 minute for questions. We have two more questions here. So Matt is asking, Signaler doesn't support WebSockets on Xamarin. Not sure who can make that happen, but I wanted to mention that I'd love to see it. That's actually not a question. Okay.
I could talk about even our world right now. We don't even have WebSockets in the .NET Core world right now. We have a prototype of it. We just haven't flipped it on yet. And once we get past RTM, that'll flip on, and we'll bring SignalR back to .NET Core as well. So one thing that we're going to do to solve any of the people that are asking questions about where is web pages, where is SignalR, where is WebSockets, what we've kind of said is we will release a schedule. As we get close to RTM, we'll release a schedule that actually tells you when the milestones of things will happen. There'll be guesses, but they'll give you a general ballpark of when is SignalR going to come. There'll be some tooling mismatches. We don't have some of the tooling, and we'll say both on a tooling side and a framework side when we think next big steps will happen. So you can see the framework move forward as we go, and so you'll see that.
Okay. Have you thought about something? So this is Simonator 1234. Have you thought about something like NPM for resolving dependencies frameworks? Well, we have something like NPM.
Yeah, I was going to say we have NuGet, which is NuGet is the package manager for .NET. I don't think we'd use NPM to manage.
Well, NPM is a little more than the package manager.
I know.
It has a lot of stuff on the command line, that would be more like the .NET CLI.
Or even the .NET. We had some of the .NET command stuff that we had done in some of the early DNX stuff.
I was going to say DNX was actually pretty close to what NPM is doing.
By design.
Whereas the .NET CLI would be closer to what the Go command line is doing. Somewhere in between.
I think we'll find something in between there. I want to bring back the command stuff. I like the command stuff. I'd like to be able to take .NET code, wrap it in a package, put it in, yeah. in a package manager, and pull it down.
So yeah, definitely, we are kind of fans of NPM and all those things. So yeah, we're definitely looking at those and trying to come up with something that is yep. .NET idiomatic and that works. All right, fun. We're out of time. Sorry, we're out of time. Thank you again for being on the show, and I have no idea who we'll have next week. All right, thanks, thank you very much. Bye, everyone.